Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again. Grab your gear. We're going to ride along with the entrepreneurs driving the e-bike revolution and the love stories of those just riding along. On this week's edition of the Pedego Podcast, brought to you by Pedego Electric Bikes. All right. Well, every week I say, I don't know how we're going to get this whole story in, but today we're going to have a real challenge here because normally we ask our guests, just give me a couple ideas, a couple hints, things to talk about. They wrote pages of stuff here, and all of it's interesting. So we're going to try and get to as much as we can. Welcome, if you will, two real entrepreneurs. I mean, they've really been on an entrepreneurial journey for a while here. Welcome, Jim and Loretta Buck. Did I say that correctly?
Yes.
Okay. Absolutely. All right. So let's just get the resume out of the way here. You didn't start life as entrepreneurs, but you seemed like you sure wanted to be an entrepreneur for a long time as you were in other corporate careers. Let's start with Jim. What did you do? I'm told you worked for Dun & Bradstreet for a long period of time.
Yeah, I was in a corporate job from, right out of college, pretty much all the way through, working with lots of different businesses, all different sizes.
And what did you do for Dun & Bradstreet? I don't even know. I know they collect data on businesses, but I don't know what you did.
Well, I was customer facing. So it went from service to sales to account management to custom projects to analytics. But it was all very much about helping someone figure out the complexities of what we were offering. And as my buddies would say, I used to sell nothing.
and sell it very well, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a fun job. We learned a lot about business, great and small, and the different departments within businesses. So,
and somewhere along the way, you met the woman who's sitting beside you here, your wife, Loretta.
Yes, you guys
have been married for a couple of years, it sounds like here.
A few.
Going on 32.
Let's get Loretta a little closer to the mic there, too, so we don't lose her.
I went farther back.
32. She looked at him. He had to look very carefully, as I would have to do if my wife. I have to go, let's see how many years that you're in. All right. So your background was totally different. I'm looking at your resume. It says Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising with a degree in merchandising. That sounds very corporate to me and sounds like that's a corporate career in the making here. It was, right?
Well, I guess it was. I mean, I was always in retail and became a buyer, then went over to wholesale and became a merchandise manager for Esprit Corps, which is corporate, but not corporate because that company was at the cutting edge of fun companies to work for.
There's a theme running through this. We'll come back to that one. Okay. Fun's definitely a theme today here. All right. So I guess what I'm trying to wonder is I talked to so many people in this show who've had similar kinds of corporate to from Wall Street to Main Street, from big corporations to small, dare I say, mom and pop kind of feeling enterprises here. What makes you move from one to the other? Why give up the security blanket and the perks and the bennies and all the other stuff and go take the scary ride of doing it yourself? And we'll go to Jim first.
Well, that's a really good question.
he's still smiling. I'm not sure.
I would say that many people would have pegged me for someone that would not do that.
Yes, right.
And, there's always this concept of an entrepreneur or a salesperson has to be this kind of person. And I felt like that was kind of bogus and I'm just going to be me. And I had success doing that. So I guess boredom.
Boredom. Okay. Kind of been there and done that. What's next? Is this all there is to life? Yeah.
Yeah. At some point you have learned enough and you want to learn more. And I think I thrive on learning new things and experiencing new things. And that was the driver. And the first step was just sort of like this epiphany of, wow, this sounds like an interesting business. And I'm talking about the previous one.
Yeah.
And
we'll go through both of them here, right? Because you've had a couple entrepreneurs.
This sounds like something that could work and it was exciting. And it just became a hobby to figure it out using my background. And somehow or another, we flipped over the edge. And we should have not made it a million times, but somehow we did.
All right. So we're teasing it. Let's talk about it. This is your first big entrepreneurial effort, because you've had two now here, the last one being the Pedego bike stores that you've opened, which we're going to talk about. But prior to that, you had this experience. You had this epiphany. You had this crazy idea to open a, do we call it go-karts? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's high-performance indoor go-karting.
And event center.
And event center. A place where, now, I say that kiddingly, but I remember as a kid, we're going to talk about your kid stories here too as a bicyclist, but I remember many years ago, I don't think they're around anymore, but I think it was Penske, the famous Penske's, had some indoor high-performance kart tracks. There was one in Michigan where I grew up, and I think it was Penske, maybe not, but and they were very popular. You went out and you rode the hell out of these very fast little go-karts, and corporate parties, birthday parties, everybody went to these things here. So I've seen these things before, and you opened one, you called it, do I get it right? You, me, go?
You got it. You, me, go. Some fun.
There you go. And the whole idea of it is fun and putting some butts in the seats, right?
Exactly.
All right. So yeah. You, where in the world did you come up with this? Not sitting in Dun and Bradstreet. Where did you come up with this idea? Back to Jim. We'll go back to Jim because I think it was Jim's idea.
Jim's idea.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I get
it was
the feeling.
Mine. I'll take credit, good or bad, about it. But the idea is that I experienced it at a sales meeting in Phoenix, and I was like, this is what I want to do. The hook was set, if you will. And I don't golf and I don't do a lot of other recreation type things. I do things that are family oriented. I've always have, and I like that, but I always was like, this is pulling my chain. I got to do this, and there's nothing near my house. Well, that's crazy. And so that became the impetus to develop something, or at least come up with an idea. And so every business trip I went on, I went to see the local track.
Right.
And I sort of took what I liked and threw away what I didn't. And with Loretta in hand and her okay to move forward, we teamed up and came up with the whole thing from scratch. It was very, very challenging and very interesting process.
Because I don't see a lot of these. I have seen them before, but I'm familiar with the concept, but I don't see them in every town I travel to. I don't see them. I don't think there's one here in Orange County anymore. There might
There's a bunch of them in Orange County.
Are there really? See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, okay. K1 kind of took over the world in that, the K1 Speed. But the reality is they're around. That most people who do it find them.
Okay.
And they're kind of in, you know, industrial areas for the most part.
Well, they got to be, because you got to take a bunch of space. I would think that's what kills them in a lot of, like, Orange County. The land is so valuable. I don't know how you'd rent it at a reasonable rate, that much space to race around a racetrack here.
Well, yeah. I mean, 54,000 square feet for us. And we, at the end of our life, we were about just under $50,000 a month in rent.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So that that becomes daunting. But it's part of the whole business structure of that business. And it's challenging now because of many things. But
obviously the biggest challenge, and it may have been, I guess, the fatal challenge, though. You were around for a number of years. It's not like this didn't go.
It would have been 15 years this April. Month. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And but unfortunately, COVID, all live events got to be the death knell for, I don't know how you hang on. The landlord doesn't say, don't pay me rent for the next year.
And so,
at some point you say, I just cannot sustain this. I mean, movie theaters are going through this, all sorts of live event spaces, concert venues, other things. I mean, it's just been a really, really hard ride for those sorts of things. So
family activity, fun activities that are indoors, you know, family fun centers.
Yeah.
Any of us indoor activities like that are unfortunately going away right now. Couple of years from now, I'm sure other people will come along.
Do it again here. All right, so that's a rough thing to go through. I my hat's off to you to have the tenacity to stick it out as long as you did. It was thriving, it was going, but things change, and all of a sudden you've got to change. why did you decide to morph into e-bikes? That seems like another sort of unproven ride out there. What led you to that epiphany, Jim? What made you say, maybe this is the next one?
Oh, well, Loretta can chime in. So the biggest thing for us is what we were doing and looking for ways to get a better return on the rent we had in our existing space.
Because you get a lot of space there. Maybe you can do other things with the space.
We had some empty space. So I'll let Loretta jump in on that.
Because she's the merchandiser. Yes. What can we put into the merchandise?
Yeah, exactly. We had a 1,300 square foot room that hardly ever got used. So the only time we used it was corporate events during the holiday season when we had overflow of events and we needed that space. Otherwise, it sat empty and we paid rent for it. Right. So we kind of went through many years and many crazy ideas of what we might put in that space, including a music venue at one point. We were considering doing a nighttime music event space back there, just a quiet little, you know, quaint place. But we hadn't come up with anything and became empty nesters. And we were, the business was running itself. We had a great manager, we had a great staff, and we were able to sit at home on weekends. And we were like, well, we need something else to do.
Yeah,
And we, you know, I'd always be, let's take the bikes and go biking, you know, let's do that. And the bikes were hanging in the garage.
And this is Northern California somewhere, so lots of hills and trails and places to go.
And we live in a hollow, so hills all around us. So it was never just hop on the bike and go. It was a process. And as Jim mentioned before is that his bike, he wasn't comfortable on his bike. It didn't make him happy to ride his bike. So taking it down from the rafters, getting ready to go was a big deal. We spy somebody on an electric bike. And I said, hey, how about we try that? Would you try that? And then we could go anywhere from our house and go ride bikes. Oh, yeah. I tried that. So sitting at home on our patio and I pull out my iPad and I'm like, electric bike rentals near me. Up pops Pedego. Mm-hmm. So there had been a Pedego store not far from us, but it was the only one in a large area. And so I'm like, oh, we can rent them from here. Let's rent them and we'll go and we'll ride around Livermore and, you know, check out the wineries. That sounds like fun. And then I see at the top, become a dealer. I'm like, huh. Click on become a dealer, start looking at that, start looking at stores online. And I'm like, hey, this could be something fun for our space.
And did you see a connection between you're putting people in go-karts or putting people on electric? I don't know if they must not be electric go-karts. They're probably gas powered.
They were gas go-karts. Yeah. So that was one of the funny parts about it. Besides that, it was Pedego and Yumigo.
Right.
It was that our Yumigo is fuel. And now here we are going, hey, electric. And so if you're in the front of the house over here, you like fuel. But if you come back here, we've got these cool electric bikes.
And your goal is to get people go-karts. Your goal is to get butts into the seat of these carts. And there, Pedego's always kidding. Let's just get butts on the seat of the bicycle.
Exactly.
Because once you try it, you're hooked.
So many little things that just spoke to us as people that had a certain business. And then here's this other business that's like, you know, all these things are lining up. It seems like this is something we're supposed to do. So we rented the bikes, rode around. He was just like, woohoo, this is fun. Now I'm really having a good time. And we had taken our manager from the go-kart place with us and we just rode all over the place and we were just like, okay, this is it. Let's do this. So we decided very quickly. We were like, well, what's the downside? The downside is we're investing in inventory that we would be able to sell that inventory.
Already got the space, already got people having fun. Why not just put them on another vehicle? Right.
Exactly. So we just felt like it was a no-brainer for us. So contacted them. That was April. We went and rented them and went through the process. June, we went down to Southern California, met with everybody, got our tours, decided we liked each other, learned more about it. And then by August, we were open. We had our first bike sales.
This is this past year. I mean, I'm just like that.
No, this was
2018.
Okay, a couple of years
ago. Yeah. So we've had it for a couple of years, luckily, because it you know, during the pandemic, it was a good thing to have.
And so pandemic hits, wouldn't that hit hard for retail too? Wouldn't that shut down the same store that you got your electric go-kart, or not electric, or gas go-kart track, wouldn't this be similarly affected?
No, because it was an essential business.
And it's, of course,
essential business.
Essential
everybody
business.
Everybody needs to be able to be transporting themselves from here to there. And so an electric bike is a transportation, and go for it.
Yeah, we followed the guidance that was very fluid from Don to all the dealers, really, and how to manage through it. I mean, I think we all just kind of were scratching our heads, but at the same time, it was like, well, a month or two in, the demand went nuts.
And that's what I hear. I mean, suddenly people are at home and I got to do something. I got to get out. I got to go.
Yeah. I think we all thought we were in for a 2 to 3 week ride, and it was all about conserving cash. And then all of a sudden you sell off all your inventory at a deal. And then all of a sudden you're like, I don't have bikes anymore.
Yeah.
I got to buy more. And it became a totally different business.
But so whereas one, I don't want to hit this too hard, because I know this was a near and dear to you and you built this big, but this go-kart thing suffered the exact opposite. You couldn't get people riding, and it's not an essential service.
We felt it in every way there was. So we felt like some people weren't affected at all. We were affected both positively and
negatively.
All
right, so now you're long for the ride. The YumiGo has run its course.
Just closed.
And you have now gone full in on electric bikes. Is that a good course to follow here? How's electric bikes riding along for you guys? We'll go to Jim first here.
Well, I love it. Number one is it puts me back on a one-on-one interaction with my guests. I definitely had that here and there in the go-kart side. I mean, I made a lot of friends, but we had hundreds of thousands of people through there over our time.
Yeah, and you're not loading everyone up and putting them on the pony,
I can affect people more directly and have more of a relationship with someone when it's one-on-one, and I think I really, really, really enjoyed that and still do. So that was really positive for me. And certainly the product is awesome. The ease of which to start that business and the support we get from Pedego is just unmatched, I think, anywhere. It's just, it's very unique. And I am certainly aligned to Pedego's as in terms of customer relationship and support. And we've always been that way, at least in my mind. And so it was just a no-brainer, and maybe luck that we got.
It sort of seems like a hybrid between your earlier corporate experience, where you have a giant brand, giant corporation behind you, and your own experience with YumiGo, where you're the brand, you're the company. There is no backstop here. There is nobody to brainstorm with or roll out new ideas or new products with. It seems like it's kind of a unique cross, because you're not you're a dealer, but you're your own. It's not a franchise. It's a licensed deal.
So. It's kind of a perfect world for anybody that wants to get into owning their own business, because, having done both, having started something from nothing, and then coming into Pedego, and that they're giving us every help, every assistance and guidance to be successful that you can possibly imagine. It just makes it so enjoyable and easy for somebody to start up their own business.
And you've got a brand, you've got logos, you've got layouts, you've got ideas of how to display and do all these other things here, along with a network of whatever it is now, a couple hundred dealers around the country, all supporting each other and challenging each other and pushing each other.
And a wonderful corporate staff. I mean, they're always there to help you and guide you through anything you need.
Well, I got to go through this story. We only got about 5 minutes left, because I just smiled so much. Again, I always ask that the guests give us just a little background so we'll know what to talk about. And Jim went crazy. He wrote the story of my life, of being 6 and 8 and 10 and all the bikes that I went through back in the day. For me, it was in the 60s. I'm a little older here. But talk us through that. You were, Jim, a bike kid. You grew up here in Orange County. I didn't know that. Right around near where I live here in Mission Viejo. All the stories you talked about, the Nadador swim team. We had somebody else on from there. In fact, we had somebody who was a board member of the Nadadors. And I think they're now a dealer somewhere in like Phoenix or somewhere, some place in Arizona. I forgot where. Oh. And she was originally a board member of the Nadador, this famous swim team that's graduated all these Olympians here in Orange County, the pool here, and riding around the Balboa Peninsula and surfing and all this. So talk about those days riding a bike in suburban Orange County here when it was still suburban. What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, and we were in the old part of Mission Viejo, but really it was, you know, riding a bike allowed me to enjoy a freedom I didn't have. Certainly when you have a year-round sports environment, your time is pretty much absorbed by everything.
Right.
And so the freedom to break away from the rules and the discipline and all that stuff that was oriented around that type of life, I think bike, the Stingray in general, was my beautiful bike. I mean, it was everything to me. It opened doors that I would have never thought I could have opened because I did it on my own and with friends. Right.
And you still own the, I always wanted to own a Schwinn Stingray. The cool kids had a Schwinn Stingray with the little handlebars that went up and all those kinds of things and the banana seat and the high back. I was stuck with what you originally started with, the Sears kind of bike. And that's all my dad would go for.
Yeah. My dad was not going to go for the Schwinn to begin with. I sort of had to prove that I would ride it.
Yeah. I guess I failed that test because I never graduated to the Schwinn.
Well, I assume that's his mindset. I kind of know him pretty well, but the reality is I got the Schwinn and we kept it. And, to be honest, it's in my dad's garage, but it's mine.
Let's roll it out. Cause I didn't think any of those even survived anymore. They gotta be like classics. They gotta be worth a fortune.
It's in good shape. It's in good shape, but I don't think they're worth that much. Believe it or
really?
Not. I don't think they are, but it's a cool bike and it means a lot,
And so you go from this, you said it, you captured it. For me, a bike was freedom. I got up in the morning and I went. In those days, we didn't worry about letting your kids out and go. I grew up in suburban Detroit. My dad was an executive for a car company. So we, it was a nice, safe neighborhood. And I just went. We got up in the morning, my buddies and I, and it was like one of those movies, movies from the 50s or 60s. We just got on our bikes and we just rode. And then we didn't come home till mom screamed for us at, supper time. And we went anywhere and everywhere through trees and trails and everything here. And I think that was all it was. And then at some point in time, we quit. And we did. I went through the next phase. You talked about going through the mountain bikes phase and the college phase and having cool bikes to go around campus and everything. Talk about that next phase when you went from just a freedom of flying around to the I don't know, pushing yourself. It was about endurance. It was about riding and conquering things. I don't know. It was about traveling longer distances. It was more than just the freedom to get away from your parents here. What was that like, that period?
Well, when the mountain biking was just about fun. Yeah. It really was. It was with my best friend. And that's why I introduced Loretta so quickly in our relationship to it. Cause I was like, you got to do this with me. This is so much fun. And I'm not a hill climber. I'm not that great at it, but I enjoyed the fun part of tearing down a hill.
And flying over the other side and everything.
Yeah. I mean, so that hasn't disappeared in me. It's just really more of what I can do with what's given to me, and having honestly a platinum cruiser right now with mountain bike tires, we can go anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. So I don't think it's changed over the years.
And that's what I think is some of the appeal. Maybe I'm putting words in your mouth here, but for me, as I listen to these stories week in and week out, I think part of the appeal for aging baby boomers like me is that it not only recaptures your youth of getting on a bike again, but that feeling of freedom, but that adventure, that go, that flying, it kind of feels like, I don't know, this is going to sound really silly, almost like a superhero. You related it to catching a wave. That's a Southern California way of looking at it. To me, it was just a way of being on a little rocket ship and going wherever I wanted to when I was little. And then later on, pushing myself to really go further. Is that correct? Do you think that's part of the appeal of this whole thing?
Yeah. And I think how you characterize it is correct from the people that we interact with all the time. I mean, there's two good things in life. One is that all these people that enjoyed biking are getting back into it.
Yeah.
Even if it's been decades.
Right.
And some of them are nervous, but they're interested. The rest, the rest that I'm seeing right now are kids are riding bikes again.
Yeah.
And
after a long period where they did not ride bikes, my daughter's 30 now. She didn't ever really want a bike. I pushed her to get on a bike. She was like, nobody rides a bike.
Ours. Yeah. Yeah. Same with ours. And that's just because it's just generational, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But I see more kids on balance bikes, and I know that there is a future for kids on bikes and people on bikes, which is exciting.
Biking is back in a big way. What do you think, Loretta? Are we just talking a bunch of guys that the bike for us was what later became our Harley or our hot rod or something? Did you have an affinity for bikes, or you just sort of rode along?
No, I mean, I rode a bike everywhere when I was a kid as well. I also grew up in Southern California, inland, in SoCal. And, that was how you got places. Your parents didn't drive you places as a kid. No. That's how you got places. And then, when he and I met, I had a bad bike. So I had a bad bike experience too. I bought a bike at
Montgomery Wards.
Yeah, Monkey Wards.
They put it together poorly. And then we met, and I was living in San Francisco. And we met, and I was like, well, it doesn't go very well, and he got me a nice, mountain bike as a first gift that he got me. And we went up to Tahoe, and we went to Lake Chabot, and we went everywhere. And it did make a difference to have the right bike under me to, keep enjoying that bike. And so we have a lot of family bike memories and, taking the kids in the trailer. And I see that happening again now. Lot of times you get a couple that one of them is still biking, one of them isn't. So they're going to get the one an electric bike so that they can go and do this together, and they can hook on their burlies and not be pulling the 100 pounds of kid behind them without any help that we did when we were younger.
Boy, amen.
And it's just, getting together and being able to do something again and going farther. Most people come in and they're like, well, I don't ride my bike anymore because I can't go any, I can only go a few miles before I'm going to be tired. My butt's going to hurt all these things. But now, you find when you're on an electric bike that you just go farther. You go.
So 2 minutes. So it's you, me, go again here. 2 minutes. Let's talk about the importance. We've never talked about it in this show. I'll give you two more. We're already a little long, but let's give you two quick minutes here. What is the importance of getting the right bike under you? Because your experience from what you described in the notes I saw is you quit biking somewhere because it was it just wasn't fun anymore. You were spending a lot of money on bikes and they weren't giving you, they were hard. They didn't fit. They didn't, every time you took it down, you went, ugh. And so you stopped riding a bike for a long time. And there's certainly that danger in e-biking too. You get on the wrong product and this isn't going to feel fun or work for you here. How important is it to get people on the right bike, and how do you do that?
Well, I mean, the funny thing was that the bike I didn't like was awesome. And I didn't realize till I had the store that it wasn't the bike, it was me not accepting that I couldn't handle it. Just didn't fit. I thought it was my fault that I couldn't ride that bike well. I thought, gosh, I have no confidence on a mountain bike, which is the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, I have this epiphany at Pedego at the store, going, "Oh, dummy! I thought that it was my fault, but it just was a bad fit."
Yeah.
So that's driving a lot of effort, because I've had bikes that are perfect and I've had bikes that aren't. And to me, it just makes me very passionate about getting it right for our guests and the people.
And is part of it just getting the butts on the seat and getting them out to ride it? Or is part of it that you can rent it? Because I couldn't go rent any of those bikes I bought in the past, the ones I loved and the ones I hated. And when I hated it, other than taking it back. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a lot about explaining the differences so that the person can connect their body with what they've heard.
Yeah.
And then taking it from there. But
we had a guy yesterday that tried five different bikes. He was trying them all because that is part of it. Finding, spending the time to find that right bike.
And right.
Jim leads them through that really well, you know, just all the benefits and what's right and what's not right. And then figuring out what's going to be right.
But the main thing, I guess, that to circle around with what we do and what we have always done, at least they're owning businesses and certainly with the family, is that we're all about having fun with someone you like or love, you know? And so back to Yumigo, Yumigo is about Yumigo, have some fun doing something we haven't done before.
Right.
And Pedigo is the same concept. Mm. And doing something fun with somebody is just the one of the best values you can get out of life.
Yeah, it's the truth.
And so
we had,
and that's why we're happy doing it, I think.
We had William Shatner on the show. I refer to it all the time because it's personal. I got such a kick out of it being such a Trekkie myself growing up, and have Captain Kirk on the show. And that's what he likes about it more than anything is the fact he can ride with his grandkids. I couldn't, he said, I can't do, I'm 90. I can't do anything with my grandkids. I can't keep up with them, but I can get on an electric bike, as you said, and hit that little throttle and go. And so it allows him to interact and to do group things together. And I hear that over and over and over again. Whereas when I was a kid, not when a little kid, but later when I was mountain biking or pushing myself, it was more of a solo thing. It was like an exercise thing. I wasn't really doing it in groups. I don't recall. And I think that's one of the differences. You're getting back to that group experience like when I was a kid, when we all got our bikes and we all rolled out every morning and we had fun together. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Well, I agree. This is definitely a trip down memory lane for me. You hit all my hot points. We could talk forever about the differences between that Schwinn Stingray boy and all the other bikes that run the market. What was it about? It almost seems like the Pedigo, what do they call the one that's the little one that everybody...
Element?
Element, yes. The Pedigo Element seems to have fit some of that. What do you think? Does that sort of fit into that category a little bit? Fun, sort of almost a trick bike you can... Very nimble, and you can do all sorts of things with it.
Absolutely, but I ride a Interceptor because the frame looks just like my Stingray.
See, there you go. All right. All right. We're all trying to recapture that youth and recall some memory from the past here and take it forward. All right. Well, I love this story. I love the entrepreneurial story. I love the lessons learned along the way, and I certainly love the return to riding a bike, just having fun. That's what it's all about. And getting out there and getting active with a bunch of people, not alone. We're too much alone these days. Don't you think so?
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think so. All right. Last thoughts. Anything else you want to take away here? There's so much to the story here. You're on your second store now here. There are more coming.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's our intent.
That's our vision.
Yeah, that's our intent. And, you know, it's just a matter of getting smart, getting organized and executing. So that's where we're at.
Well, spreading more love.
There you go. Well, you've created a lot of love here today, and you've certainly shown yourselves to be smart and adaptable and creative and successful entrepreneurs. And those are all the elements it takes to be a businessman, I think, today here. Thanks for coming on the show, letting us ride along here. What a great story.
No, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Personal favorite of mine. Anytime we're going to talk about Schwinn Stingrays and riding bikes as a kid, you got me right away. So thanks for riding along. We hope you'll join us each and every week as we talk about the entrepreneurs driving the e-bike revolution and the love stories of those just riding along. Right here in the Pedigo Podcast, brought to you by Pedigo Electric Bikes.